You're listening to Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello again, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. It's go time. It's game week. Football starts on Thursday, and I'll be watching as everybody else will, I'm sure. But everybody really gets ramped up on Sunday. College football's, you know, in full swing. Craziness is happening already. But that's what college football is all about. But NFL football is right around the corner. Our Buccaneers have a game against the Dolphins on Sunday, 1 o'clock. So we're going to break that down scientifically in a little bit. But also, when we talk a little bit of college football as well, in the trenches will also mean some college. Obviously, we live here in Florida, and this is a college football state, and I think you guys all know that. There's a lot of things going on this weekend as far as Florida went. Not all good, but a lot of stuff going on. So we're going to talk a little college football. We're going to break down that Buccaneers game against the Dolphins and, you know, touch base on a few other things. First of all, I want to talk about what's happening in Houston, and that's not over. I mean, I don't think people really sit back and think about what that would do to somebody's lives. And, you know, watching some of those highlights and those clips of what those people are going through in Houston, and everybody looks just bumfuzzled. They don't know what to do with themselves. And, you know, when you can't go to the bank and get money because everything's down, and you don't have any water, you don't have any food, and you don't have any transportation, and your kids are cold, and, you know, that's a tough situation. And I still, when I'm seeing lineups, you know, of hundreds of cars in a row waiting to pick up some water, I still got to say, where the hell is everybody? And with all the money that we have, we can go to the moon and do a lot of different things. How can we can't freaking ship in some water somehow? Bring some helicopters and bring some damn water somehow. So I'm not there. I don't know how good or how bad it is, but sure, I'm thinking about those people over there and what they're going through, because I wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't wish that on your worst enemy. Okay, so let's hope for the best. Let's hope for the best. That's not something that's going to be rectified real soon. There's a lot of people relocating, and nobody wants to just have to relocate to a different city and not know anybody and not know where all your friends are. So I'm hoping the best for those people over there in Houston. And big ups to J.J. Watt, who I've said many times, when healthy, is my favorite NFL football player. Big ups to him, who I think set out to raise a few $100,000, and I believe he's somewhere around $18 million. So, you know, I'm seeing kids with lemonade stands that are donating, you know, money to J.J. Watt, and I'm just hoping it gets to the right people, because $18 million is a lot of money. But when I'm seeing people still struggling to get water, I'm still wondering where that money's going. But J.J. Watt, good for you. You did some beautiful things. Now, we live here in the Tampa Bay area, so our home team is the USF Bulls. For most people, no, that's not true. There's way more Gators, and there's way more Seminoles, and there's way more Hurricanes. But USF Bulls are in our town. So I am a makeshift. Oh, I'm a Bull fan, okay? Didn't watch much of that game. I watched some highlights. Couldn't even find it on television, to be honest with you. That game, meaning USF versus Stony Brook. And I know a lot of USF fans. On my show on the Bone on Sunday, Greg Wolf was on with me. He's a voice of USF. So, you know, he's really optimistic. I had Brandon Rimes on the other day, the real estate quarterback. He was one of the first USF Bulls, one of the first quarterbacks there. So, you know, we have optimistic people. Now, I'm not an optimistic person by nature. I am a realistic person, swaying on pessimistic. That's, I mean, you have to prove to me what's going on. To hear somebody talk about going 12-0 when you can barely beat Stony Brook, to me, sounds a little silly. Like, all those things, we're going to keep on improving. You know, you can get worse, too. You know that, right? But if you just beat San Jose State and you just beat Stony Brook, maybe you shouldn't be talking about going undefeated. You should really be talking about who's coming up the next week, because they play to this point like a team that's going to lose four games. Okay, if they play this way the rest of the season, they're going to lose at least four games, because it's sure enough going to get harder than Stony Brook, that's for sure. Now, going elsewhere in Florida, the Gators, Gator fan, also very optimistic. Oh, this is a year, blah, blah, blah. Listen, Gators offense hasn't been good since Timmy Tebow left. I mean, they suck. I have no idea what they run. I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. Defensively, they're always pretty good. They have a good pass rush, but, man, Florida's hard to watch, man. They are boring. They are. My daughter just graduated from Florida. My youngest is going there. And I don't know if anybody has any confidence anymore. You know, I'm hearing people say, well, we kept it close, but you guys are Florida, man. You guys were just vying for national championships just a few years ago. And now you're happy if you're just competing. So I'm not sure how Florida's season's going to go. I don't know if the SEC is as strong as it has been. But I just think it might be a tough season for a lot of Florida teams. FSU, I mean, they lost their quarterback, DeAndre Francois. Sophomore kid, ruptured his patella. You don't ever come back from that the same. I mean, you could understand losing to Alabama in week one. You know who's going to beat Alabama in week one? Nobody. Nobody. You know, and Florida State is allowed to be optimistic that you're going to beat Alabama in week one, but if you're sensible about it, you're not beating Nick Saban in week one when he has a whole offseason to prepare for you with all those damn studs he has over there. It's just not going to happen. And when you watch Alabama football, that is no-nonsense football. You know what? No-nonsense football never goes away. It's just good on the line, hard nose, play hard. If he ain't playing hard, I'll put somebody else in there to play hard. That's all Nick Saban's doing to me. He ain't doing much more than that. A couple of other games that I've seen around the way. The UCLA Texas A&M game. I watched the first half of that game, and I wrote down notes, and I said, Texas A&M is one of the best teams I've seen in a long time. And I was on the Stairmaster this morning at Crunch Fitness, and I saw that UCLA came back on them. Don't know how, because A&M looked like world beaters at the beginning of that game. Offensively, defensively, and I guess this kid from UCLA, the quarterback, I guess he's the real deal. He looked like crap in the first half. But I guess they figured things out, and they got that whole taken care of. I know A&M has to be just sick to their stomach, because they pretty much were just handling things in the first half. Now, a couple of cool things that happened in college, and I got to say, you know, that kid Jake Olson from USC, who is the blind snapper, you know, in this day and age of millennials where, you know, nobody wants to work hard, and nobody wants to put it in, just think of how much work this kid had to put in to become a long snapper. First of all, just to do it. Okay, and then be good enough to play for his high school, then be good enough to go to USC, then be good enough to get put on the field. So this kid who was completely blind, I mean, he has to run out on the field holding one of his teammates' shoulders, goes out there and does a perfect snap, hold, everything. Now, I was watching. Nobody was rushing on purpose, and I get it. It was the end of the game, and the game was just about over. And nobody, you don't want to hit the blind kid in the back of the head, do you? I wouldn't. So the kid goes out there, makes a great snap. They kick the extra point, and I love stories like that. There's too many able-bodied people out there that have a lot of excuses. And when you see a kid like that who doesn't have any excuses, and this is his dream to play for USC, and for him to get that done, I mean, that kind of stuff makes me feel damn good about the world and what it could be. Then I put on the political channel, and that comes back to reality. All right, so NFL's right around the corner. For any of you guys that want to ask me any questions, you can go to IanBeckles@RadioInfluence.com, and you can ask me any question you want. I have a couple questions I got this week that I'm going to go to in a little bit. But I'm going to break down the Buccaneers game. And first of all, I'm going to talk about a couple things that were happening around the NFL. Brock Osweiler, who got cut by the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland just grasps for straws. You all know that, right? Like, they just keep on grasping here, there, and everywhere, looking for the answer. They can't find the answer because they don't have – it starts at the top, okay? Whoever's at the top of Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns, you suck, and you've sucked for a long time. I know it's changed throughout the years, but they just can't – they can't get a handle of anything. And Brock Osweiler, who signed a four-year, $72 million contract with $36 million guaranteed – for you to eat that quickly, boy, he must suck. And then he goes back to the Denver Broncos, and he makes $775,000, probably has a gang of incentives, and everybody's acting like John Elway's this, you know, this genius for getting this kid back. If the kid was that good, they would have never lost him in the first place, okay? Because you don't lose a good quarterback. And Brock Osweiler, you know, it was on a great football. Listen, Tim Tebow looked good on the Broncos. Okay, for a little bit, he looked great for some people. He looked great. He looked good for a little bit with the Broncos because they have good football players all around him. So Osweiler's going to go back there. I don't foresee him having a lot of success. I really don't. You know, these guys who play a handful of good games and they make all this money, it never works. It really doesn't. If you haven't played 20 good games in the NFL, you ain't done squat yet. And let me give you a good example. The Patriots obviously have Tom Brady at quarterback, but they got that Garofalo backing up. And the Patriots retained him in the offseason because everybody wanted to trade for him and give this and give that for him. But, you know, Belichick's a smart dude, first of all. First of all, they're stacked everywhere. And Brady... he's close to Superman, but him going down this year wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world, okay? It wouldn't be. He's getting right about to that time of his career, but you got to really start taking care of him. And I know they know what's going to happen eventually, okay? So, you know, Garofalo's probably not making a buttload of money, but he's obviously very valuable to the Patriots. And he knows the system, and that's really valuable. If somebody goes and throws Garofalo a lot of money, he's going to go somewhere and not be that great. That's just the way it is. When you're with the Patriots, boy, you're in that system. You everything is different, and you're going to be successful. If you go somewhere else, you got to change the attitude of everybody on that football field because everybody on the Patriots field has a certain attitude because Belichick doesn't allow them to think any other way. So Garoppolo is going to make his money eventually, but I'm telling you what, you know, if he goes somewhere else, he won't be that successful, I'm telling you. And if he stays with the Patriots, he's going to have to prove that he can be the man, or else they're not going to give them buttloads of money. They're just not going to do it. Other things going on is, you know, Zeke Elliott is, you know, trying to get out of the suspension. And after hearing all these stories, first of all, nobody's less of a fan of Roger Goodell than me. I can't stand Roger Goodell. Can't stand him. He's never done anything to benefit the players. It's always the owners. And he tells you, I work for the owners. And this is not a commissioner thing because, you know, I remember when I played and everybody's like, hey, Paul Tagliabue's here. We went and we greeted Paul Tagliabue like he was like our, you know, fierce leader. Okay. I got his autograph. I met Paul Tagliabue. That was great. If Roger Goodell was in the building, ain't nobody running up him and hugging him. Nobody. Nobody has love for Roger Goodell. When you look into it, they had some mediators and they had some middle people that were looking into the Ezekiel Elliott situation, and they all said that he shouldn't get a suspension. All of them. And then Roger Goodell went and said, "Hey, screw it. We're going to suspend him anyways." That sounds very eerily similar to some other stuff we have going on in the United States of America. I'm just telling you. He doesn't give a shit what anybody else thinks. He really doesn't. And it's a shame. Because these are people's lives. Like, I don't know what happened with Zeke Elliott and that young lady. You don't know what happened. But we still want to, you know, have opinions. We have no idea what happened. I don't even know the story. But we always have to have opinion. But this is the problem, okay? If everybody says that Zeke Elliott shouldn't get suspended and Roger Goodell suspends him, now he's a guy who raped a woman or was part of domestic abuse. That's what he is. And Roger Goodell is making him that. And to me, that's not fair. That's not fair for anybody. the mediators, the Cowboys, everybody's backing this kid. And once again, I'm not telling you he's innocent, but I just think that Roger Goodell has too much damn power. He has too much power. And when you're one-sided, and he's one-sided, we've had commissioners before that are two-sided. They gave a crap about the players. He doesn't give a crap about the players. And he's going to sign more contracts and more contracts and more contracts because the owners know that Roger Goodell is going to F the players when it all comes down to it. So, I mean, I had to get that off my chest because, you know, Zeke Elliott's sitting back. And once again, I'm not saying he's innocent, but, you know, due process is good. Doing what right is good. Speaking of which, you know, there's still players now. Colin Kaepernick still hasn't found a team. And I'm not sure he's going to. I'm not sure he's going to be on a team this year. And somebody's going to go down, and somebody else is going to pass up on Colin Kaepernick. And this is a black eye on the NFL. I don't care what anybody says. Because we still live in America, by the way. Okay? And we still have rights, allegedly. Now, listen to the irony of this story. All right? A bunch of the Cleveland Browns didn't stand up for the anthem. They knelt. A bunch of them, probably six or seven, maybe eight. So we have six or seven or eight African-American football players that aren't standing for the anthem. And we all know that the majority of the terrible stories of the oppression are coming from policemen. And if you're a good policeman, God bless. And if you're a good policeman, this shouldn't offend you. It shouldn't offend you, okay? So the policemen of Cleveland got together, and they're going to be going to the Cleveland Browns game to represent in some way or another. And the policeman, the head of the police, said the Cleveland police won't be carrying in the flag because of how the players are protesting or why the players are protesting. So let me get this straight. The Cleveland police are not going to carry the flag into the stadium because of a black player protesting against police brutality. So a black player kneeling is un-American, but a policeman not bringing in the flag is not un-American. How does that make it better? And how does this not become divisive? You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's not good, people. It ain't good, okay? Because when I looked up and I looked in the police chief's face, yeah, I got the willies a little bit with a couple things that he said, like, if you keep on talking, you're going to show your ass. That's what happens. And the police chief said, well, the baseball players aren't protesting. Well, Mr. Police, there's barely any black baseball players. Barely any. There's lots of black football players. So what would happen to a black baseball player if he didn't stand? He'd be out of the league immediately. Immediately. Nobody want part of that. So there's, you know, there's right and wrong, but I tell you what, it just seems like everything everybody's doing now is divisive. And it's separating our country, black and white, whether you think it's happening or not. Because none of it is good. And we got people protesting protests that's protesting another protest, and it's just black and white. And it's sad. I really do believe that. And, you know, if you're evaluating people, you got to evaluate them all the same. You know, not representing the flag is the same as not standing. And, you know, there's been people not standing forever. There's religions that don't stand for the national anthem. And they don't get blackballed out of leagues. And they don't get blackballed out of a way to make money. So I wish we'd all stand back and really look and see what's going on, because it is not getting pretty. It's not pretty at all. Okay, let's get to the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers are playing on Sunday, playing the mighty, mighty Miami Dolphins. Who ain't so mighty. Tannehill went down in preseason, and let me tell you something, okay? Tannehill got paid. He's not scary. He's serviceable. He don't win no games. So the fact that they lost Tannehill, it's a big deal. When you lose your quarterback, it's a big deal. I had this, discussion with a young lady. Elmer's is where I go and hang out and have a cocktail or two sometimes, or often. And lady, she says, well, you know, Florida has a bunch of injuries, but it doesn't matter because they get a bunch of good recruits anyways. And I go, what would make you think that? She goes, well, you know, they get top-notch recruits. And I go, well, if your right tackle goes down and you bring in your backup right tackle, you're not as good. She goes, that's not true. I go, well, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm 100% right. If a starter goes, there's nobody behind the starter that's as good. It just doesn't work that way. Because if you're that good of a football player, they're going to find somewhere to put you. Promise. So when Tannehill goes down, you're a lesser team. They're going to have to do better things around whoever goes in there, whether it's Jay Cutler and his sourpuss face and terrible attitude and non-leadership, or Matt Moore, who is just a name, whoever it may be. You know, I've never been a Jay Cutler fan. He's got a lot of ability. If Jay Cutler starts, I might put a gang of money on the Buccaneers. I'm not sure what the line is going to be, but either one of those quarterbacks I see getting split open, hopefully. You got to beat. There's a few early games in this season where the Bucs just cannot lose, and this is one. You can't. You gotta figure out a way to win this game because it's going to get a lot tougher. Now, Jay Cutler's 4-1 against the Buccaneers, and that's with the throttling he took last year. So the last time he played, you know, he got throttled, so that's a good thing. And the other thing is, you know, the Dolphins may not even come out and say who's starting. It doesn't really matter. It's not like it's Michael Vick that might start. Well, you got a game plan against Michael Vick. You don't have the game plan against Matt Moore or Jay Cutler, okay? None of them have that many, you know, intangibles where you have to game plan them specifically. So, you know, looking around this Dolphins team, they have that Jay Ajayi, who's a nice player. Had almost 1,300 yards last year, almost 5 yards a carry, which is a big deal. Okay, so I don't care who you're playing against. If you allow someone to get 5 yards a carry, you're going to lose those games. They got some good wide receivers. Jarvis Landry had a big year last year, 94 receptions. They got Stills and they got Parker. Listen, it's a serviceable offense, okay? It's serviceable. You can win with them, but I'm not sure if they can win with Jay Cutler. But then again, we got to score some points. Like we didn't score that many points in preseason. We got to score some points, obviously. Now, defensively, they got a couple of dudes out there that can play. Cameron Wake can play. When I watch Cameron Wake, he's always making plays. And he's always making big plays, which is important. I think he had 11.5 sacks last year. And, you know, I've had this discussion with people before, and they're like, you know, Gerald McCoy is much better than Ndamukong Suh. I've watched a lot of football in my life, and ironically, Gerald McCoy gets, you know, compared to Warren Sapp all the time. I'm sitting in my dignitary headquarters right here, and Warren Sapp was here last week, and we were talking about defensive tackles and greatness, and I said this about greatness, okay? Greatness is always around the football. And if you watch Ndamukong Suh, he's always around the football. That's what makes you great. You can't run the ball by greatness. And when we talk about Suh and McCoy, when that ball snapped, I'm telling you, Sue's going to be near the football. If the quarterback's throwing the ball, he may not be sacking the quarterback, but he's going to have his lineman in the lap of the quarterback. I'm telling you, watch. We have a couple of players, Sweezy, that haven't played last year. Ndamukong Suh can take over a game from the inside. He didn't have as many sacks as McCoy last year, but he had twice as many tackles. That's a big deal, okay? 72 tackles for an inside player is a lot of damn tackles, okay? So keep an eye on that. I mean, I'm a huge Ndamukong Suh fan, also because of his attitude. He's just a mean SOB, and I love me a good mean SOB, okay? Especially if he's on my team. But keep an eye on that. And you know what? You know, Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy, they're always going to be kind of compared to each other as well. That's going to inspire one of them or maybe both of them. So keep an eye on what those guys have going on this week. Dolphins have some big-name linebackers that, you know, I don't know how effective they are anymore. Kiko Alonso, Ray Maluga, and Lawrence Timmons, all from other teams that played well. I don't know what they're going to be doing over there. The Dolphins aren't a scary football team to me. Nobody fears them. Like if I say to you, what do the Dolphins do well? They run the ball okay, and there's not much else other than that. They rush the passer okay. And you know what? Maybe this is the pot calling the kettle black, because I'm not quite sure what the Buccaneers do all that well yet either. Okay, so you got to watch out for that, okay, because we're not quite there yet. Now, you know, I'm feeling good about the Buccaneers. They came out with the last cuts, and the last cut was kind of weird because it's got to be tough for the GMs when they have all that many cuts all in one day. They used to kind of break them down, two or three cuts. So Jason Light was very busy, obviously, getting some things done. He brought in T.J. Ward, Broncos safety, who probably is going to be competing against Conte, I hope. But we'll see. I mean, it's hard to come in here late and get that done. I think safety might be one of the positions where you can just kind of pencil them in there. Now, we know about the offseason acquisitions of DeSean Jackson, who I believe looked brilliant in practice. If he stays healthy, I think we're going to be fine there. Mike Evans, I think, is one of the better, you know, receivers. No, Mike Evans is one of the better players in the league right now, and his attitude is thusly. So he thinks he's one of the best players in the league. I love that. Like, when I see an interview with Mike Evans, he's talking about being one of the best athletes in the world. I love that kind of stuff because I know he's training himself like that. So I think DeSean Jackson is going to push Mike Evans a little bit to be a little bit greater than he has been. And that's a wonderful thing. O.J. Howard, I'm not one to put labels on anybody. I like what I've seen so far. And not so much the pass catching, because a lot of people can pass catch. But if you're going to run the football, tight end has to block. And O.J. Howard has done a wonderful job. I'll give you a good name, Jimmy Graham. I would never want Jimmy Graham on my team because I want to run the football. And he ain't trying to block nobody. So the second Jimmy Graham went over there to Seattle, I go, that's not going to work because he's going to change the attitude. And the attitude changed in Seattle. They've never been the same football team since. Cameron Brate, another guy who, once again, is not going to have to be a big deal. He's going to be a secondary guy. Last year, he was the man. And you're a secondary guy. All of a sudden, people become, you know, more effective. Obviously, Jameis Winston. Offensive line-wise, they got Smith, Penfield, Marpet, Sweezy, and Dotson. I don't know. That's a big question mark, okay? It's a huge, huge question mark. And we had a question from John, and the question was, everybody always talks about how important it is for the O-line to gel and come together. How does that happen? Is it just playing time together, or is it more behind the scenes, which is a very good question. It does help if you played next to somebody for years. Like I played next to Tony Mayberry for 7 years. And it got to a point where he didn't have to make calls anymore. I knew the calls, okay? Actually, when Tony was concussed during the game and he still stayed in the game, I had to make the calls. So we always knew what the next guy was doing. Now, on my right side, right tackle, I had a bunch of different guys that I played with. And some worked, some it didn't, for whatever reason. Sometimes you don't mesh with certain players. And sometimes players aren't that great. So having played next to players helps. And then I give you another situation. When I went to Philadelphia, Steve Everett was the center, and he was a veteran. So we just meshed. We both knew how to play. And on my right side was Richard Cooper, who was also a 10-year veteran. So we just all gelled right away. It just worked. We liked each other as people. We respected each other. And it just happened immediately. So, you know, there's no reason why this offensive line can't come together and be great. I mean, it's all about being physical. If they come out there and they're physical, they're protecting their quarterback, they're the leaders on the offense. You know, Jameis is the leader, but the offensive line's got to be, you know, the nuts and bolts of it. Because if your offensive line's soft, that ain't going to work. And I like to see things like, if somebody hits your quarterback late, somebody get up there to his defense. And, you know, I'm supposedly Sweezy's that guy. I see it in Marpet a little bit. You know, I used to see it in Donald Penn way back when. We got rid of him for nothing. But some of these offensive linemen need to step up and be badasses. Like old school John Runyon, you know, Bruce Matthews, badasses. Going on and knocking cats out. So I'm hoping to hell this offensive line comes together. I have faith that it will. The running back position, you know, Doug Martin's out for the first few games. Jacquizz Rodgers in there. I'm just not going to spend a lot of time on a running back because I just think it's just not that important anymore. And I just don't think we have anybody that's that brilliant. And there's not a lot of brilliant running backs out there. And they may be brilliant for a year, but that's about it. So listen, to me, it's all about the offensive line. Now, the one thing to me where the Bucs have improved immensely is depth, because it used to be like, you know, the Bucs had okay starters and the backups just did not, they had nothing. Listen to the backups we have on offense. Adam Humphries, who at times had to be the man the last few years. Joe Hawley, who started many, many games for the Bucs. Evan Smith, who started a few games for the Bucs. Luke Stalker, who's done a whole lot here. Ryan Fitzpatrick, who started many games. And Charles Sims, who has played a little bit and kind of limited, but he's gotten in there. But when you talk about backups, now all of a sudden we have some depth on this football team. And the Bucs have never really had depth before, okay? And I think for the first time they have some depth. And offensive depth maybe isn't quite as important as defensive depth, but you're going to have some injuries. And it's nice that if Marpet goes down with his ankle, and we have Hawley come in here who we know can play, we're going to take a step back once again because Marpet's a better football player, but we're going to have somebody in there at least has a little bit, you know, of experience, and we know that can get in there and has some film. Now, defense. Defensive line is the key to anybody's defense. I don't care how great your DBs are. If your defensive line is not getting a rush, you ain't winning. Ayers, McCoy, Baker, Golston, name-wise, as good as probably we've had in a little while, which means nothing. Okay, let's try to establish something. Let's try to come out there with an attitude. Like, the D-line has to be the leaders as well. Okay, the D-line's getting punched all over the place. You don't win football games. And they got to be the badasses. Now, once again, you talk about depth. We got Noah Spence, who's a good change-up guy. Clinton McDonald, who at times looks as good as some of the starters. They got the Saliga guy, the Samoan guy, who I just like Samoan guys. You got to have a Samoan guy in the middle because they got big ankles and big wrists. And Jacquees Smith, who's a good change-up guy as well, has to stay healthy. So we talk about depth. We got some depth on defensive line. Depth on defensive line is way more important than depth on offensive line, because you can spell, or, you know, spell me is a football word, get some rest to the defensive line and bring somebody else in and let them play. And when the Buccaneers were great back in the day, and their defensive line coach was Rod Marinelli, some guys would come off the bench and play 10 plays, whether it be Tyoka Jackson, and there's some other names that come up I can't think of right now, Kachidi at the beginning of his career. And if you're going to get 10 plays, you better be balls out for those 10 plays. So, you know, sometimes it was better to be blocking the starter than the guy who's coming off the bench. So the defensive line has to have that mentality where if they're in a football game and they're going to get 10 rushes, they better come out balls out and prove themselves and prove that they deserve some playing time. Now, we have Levante David, obviously, weak side linebacker. Quan Alexander, that's my guy, middle linebacker. We need him to stay healthy. You know, strong side linebacker, which is, to me, the most irrelevant part of the defense. You can kind of have interchangeable names. We have Devontae Bond or Kendall Beckett. You might see a little of both of them, don't know. Defensive back-wise, I know people are asking, is this the year for Vernon Hargraves? You know, how good is he going to become? It's going to depend on the pass rush, like I said before. But I see them do a couple things in preseason that makes me think that, you know, he's growing up a little bit. Like, I don't think he did anything glaringly negative last year. He competed. You're going to get beat a little bit. But he showed that he belongs in the NFL. Breck Rimes has to stay healthy. Okay, that's going to be important. But then they have backup McClain that's done some pretty good things here in the preseason. Safety, we have Keith Tandy and Chris Conte. I like the way Tandy ended the season last year. Chris Conte, to me, is okay if he plays minimally. If you put him in there a lot, he's trailing a lot of plays. He just is. And they brought in the kid TJ Ward from the Broncos. A lot of people say that's money-related. But you have to be leery about any team that cuts a player, because teams don't really cut really good football players, regardless how much money they're making. So, you know, the Buccaneers on paper, which you don't play, on paper, obviously, look as good and as talented as they have in a while, but not established, though. Like, you know, when you look at some teams, you'll say, well, that guy's just a good football player, and that guy's a great football player. The Bucs aren't there yet. They got some players on the come up, but they have more established football players. Like, you talk about Mike Evans, you talk about DeSean Jackson, that's established. We know what we have there. And then when you talk defensively, there'll be a couple of names here and there, Quan Alexander, Lavonte David, we know what we have there. We know what we have in McCoy, we know what we have in Baker, so there's more established players there. But you got to come together as a team. And that's the one thing the Buccaneers just really haven't done yet. And hopefully they get that accomplished. The big game is Sunday at 1 o'clock. For those of you looking for somewhere to watch the game, I'm going to be doing my show on 102.5 The Bone on Sunday from 11 to 1. From Thirsty First, which is in St. Petersburg. They have great food, good place to watch the football game. Come and hang out. We're going to do some Buccaneer trivia and have some prizes. And we're going to do a little Dignitaries, my brand. We're going to do a little Dignitary photo shoot as well. So it's going to be real sexy. So go check us out if you're looking for somewhere to come and have some wonderful food and some cold drinks. Thirsty First in St. Petersburg. I'll be there all the way through the game. And I believe they're at Giants Bar as well. The Giants will be playing at 4 o'clock. So you can kind of hang out there afterwards and watch those games. So hope to see you Thirsty First on Sunday. I also have another podcast, Flavor in Your Ear. You can catch on Radio Influence, iTunes, the whole nine yards. I just started a radio show with Ray Lampe called Tailgater University, which is on 102.5 The Bone. We're talking about cooking and entertaining and grilling, and it's a lot of fun. So you definitely check me out on social media to find out what I'll be doing. At Ian Beckles, I-A-N-B-E-C-K-L-E-S. And hopefully you follow me and, you know, bring you along. And I hope you guys are enjoying In the Trenches. I enjoy doing it myself. Talking about football is something I definitely miss. You know, I don't miss talking about the Rays, okay? And I don't miss that. I miss talking about the Buccaneers. And that's why this In the Trenches is going to be wonderful. And we'll be doing it all the way through the season. And then let's hope it's it stays upbeat and up-spirited because, you know, I don't want to be doom and gloom. You know, and these first few games, you know, are a big deal. There's going to be a few games in there that you have to win if the Buccaneers think that they're going to contend. And this is the year. Buccaneer fans deserve a winner this year, and they expect a winner. And I know our quarterback expects a winner as well. So let's hope for the best. And you got to start by beating Miami. You got to beat Miami. You got to figure out a way. I don't care if it's hideous. You got to figure out a way to beat Miami without a quarterback, that's for sure. So if you want to get in contact with me, if you have any questions, ianbeckles@radioinfluence.com or else tune me in, Flavor in Your Ear, coming up later this week. And In Your Trenches will be every Monday or right after the Buccaneers game. I hope you don't miss it. Everybody have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter, at Ian Beckles, for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.